You dickheads.
Welcome to episode 24. This one we're calling WTC 2017, Mr. December. David, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Campbell. I'm full of potentially festive cheer, would you believe?
Nice.
I love Christmas. I love international tournaments. I love talking to people who win international tournaments. I love Germany. Germany and Christmas sounds like a pretty nice place. It's all there.
Fantastic.
It's all there.
Fantastic. No, I like this episode. So this one, we're basically rocking out a little interview or a couple of interviews. We wanted to gain two perspectives on the WTC, one of which is with our favourite Germans, Timmy, and the winning team of the WTC. And then we chose to choose a different angle. We got Jamie Perkins on, game designer at Steamforged. Everyone knows him. But we actually just wanted to chat to him about his gameplay and get a perspective from that. So, pretty good episode we got lined up.
Yeah, Perkins as a human, an actual human, a game playing human, but also as a kind of a sex symbol in a way. Like Perkins watch really launched him into the stratosphere, and I think he's now looking to build a career as a calendar model as a result. So go, Jamie.
Absolutely. So as part of that, Jamie will be the Mr. December in the Guild Ball 2018 calendar that we will be releasing. So he's solidified that spot. He looks good in a bikini. He gave us all sorts of insight into what he was wearing during the interview. And I was slightly aroused. I won't lie.
He really knows how to work a camera.
He's good. He's good. So, it's a good little chat. The Germans are fantastic. We have a five-way conversation across all sorts of continents and basically the other side of the world. So it does kind of jump in and out. We do talk it all over each other, but I'm pretty sure, David, you and your absolute mastery of editing have just cut all that out, and we all sound like David Hasselhoff at that point.
Yeah, I had to bust out the big guns, man. Power washer, some sanders. There was a few small Dickensian orphans there as well. They were working their little fingers to the bone. Yeah, it was good. Worked out well.
As long as you're paying them, it wasn't slave labor. That's fine.
Yeah, man, the Germans were good actually, because they gave us some insight into how the German meta operates. You know, the way they see the game, the sort of the shift in the meta with the recent errata. Really, really lovely blokes, and definitely playing at a very, very high level. It'll be interesting to see the outcome of the German national tournament, which is occurring as we make this introduction.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, round one's over. Our good mate Timmy's into round two, so I think it's four rounds. There's 12 guys in the finals. I do believe Christian Metz is also there, absolutely straight up toweling people with hammer. So yeah. I love that. I love everything about that.
Yeah, he's a lovely bloke too. Yes, so pretty big episode, two back-to-back interviews. Let's just get this shit done, man. Let's get it done! All right, all the way from Germany, we have not one, but three German champions. We have the lovely Tim Wisniewski, who is no stranger to anybody. We have the very handsome Martin Koch, who I've never met, but I'm very intrigued by. And of course, last but definitely not least, Christian Metz. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Welcome to Double Dutch.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
So much enthusiasm. So we got you on because we wanted to have a chat about the WTC, and we figured if we're going to talk about the WTC, we probably want the winners of the WTC on. And it just so happens that you guys did, so this worked out really well. Yeah, do you want to maybe throw into a bit of background about the trip? Tell us about how excited you all were.
Yeah, to be honest, I think it was a big size tournament, but still it was a tournament. So I have had the same mindset I had before in any other tournament. So I was pretty relaxed.
Are you saying that winning has made you jaded, Tim?
No, I'm basically don't care as much as other people would, maybe.
Does he win a lot? I don't
know. Not against
I never see you win.
Right, so basically you have to leave Germany to get your wins. Am I hearing that correctly?
Only if he is participating as well, so... Or I was able to win one tournament where he participated as... Or two, so because I could dodge him due to strength of schedule or something like this. So we hadn't had to play against each other. So I won because of a better strength of schedule. So I think that might be the only reason why I won this. Every other tournament I lost against him when I faced him.
So, Christian, are you then responsible for the German juggernaut? Are you the German juggernaut?
No, I don't think so. Just want to play. Doesn't care what. Don't care what.
Modest. Yeah, and I think the big thing that came out of the WTC was Hammer is a thing. I think it's been said a number of times that you guys stand quite separate to the rest of the world and you're thinking about Guild Ball, and that your meta is wildly divergent from the norm. What's the deal with Hammer? Like, why does he feature so heavily?
I think I was the first to play Hammer. I played him since he released and just had a lot of fun with him. And sometime later, a few Germans jumped on the bandwagon and hammered along with me. And I think all of them had a lot of fun with it.
Did you appreciate them improving Hammer halfway through Season 3 for you?
No, I don't think it was an improvement. I think it was a change. I quite like the new Legendary because I never used the Heroic because it was always... Hammer was my first activation. Then there was no influence left to use the Heroic, so the Legendary buff is quite nice. But I don't... let me phrase it different. The new playbook is so different, it is not the same anymore. First thing first is the tackle knockdown, so he can't tackle close control guys anymore. That is a little bit strange. Mm-hmm. And then he had a momentous damage knockdown in the old playbook and on column 3, and this is now a non-momentous damage knockdown on column 4. And so this hampered his ability to take down a player straight from the go. So I think it's a little bit different. But the new one momentous damage and the two momentous push, these are really good. So it's different. He's changed, but I still love to play him. And I don't care about honor.
Man, like, have you told the Masons forums? Because I think that's going to break some hearts.
Yeah, but I don't know. I never get in these discussions because it's getting tiring.
It is. I think that's a very polite way of putting it, Christian, and that's to your credit.
But I played a lot of Honor before the WTC because I never played Honor and had a lot of fun with Van her sister because before season 3 there I played always Hammer, but I never played the normal Harmony. And so for the first time in my life, I played a lot of Honor and her sister, and this was a lot of fun. But then I needed to cut her for Rekka, and so it was clear from the beginning I would never play Honor in this tournament.
Cut for a mascot.
I would really like to have 11 players with me, but someone needed to go, and it was normal Harmony.
Gains. Mad gains. So you boys, you played Engineers, Masons, and Martin. What was the team that you played at the WTC?
I played Fisherman. I only play Fisherman.
He is HR-fish positive.
Rip. Yeah. I'm probably the inventor of HI-fish positive.
No.
Oh, you're the
I'm patient. The reason.
And do you spread your time equally between Corsair and Shark, or are you all on Shark?
No, I think Shark is not strong enough to play him in any game. If the opponent knows what to do, you can't play Shark. I play just Corsa.
He seems like a very strong choice in the current meta.
Yes, he is. And I had Shark on my tens to make my opponent believe that I would play Shark, but I don't play Shark. I just played all the same six in all five games of the WTC.
What did that six look like?
I played Corsair, Tentacles, Normal Siren, Jag, Grayscales, and Sakana.
No Avarice and Greed? You don't ride Avarice and Greed in Corsair?
No, I don't need them. They are too slow, and there's nothing they can really do for my game.
Now, you played a game on stream from what I saw, is that right?
Yeah, the fourth game against Pet.
Right, yes. Where the American dream ended.
Yes.
How does that sit with you? Crushing dreams.
The Americans are very, very nice, and I had a lot of fun playing them, and they are much nicer in real life than they are on their podcast.
That's fantastic, mate. Has Timmy given you boys media training or something? Have you all been through a round of it? These answers are so good. Perfect.
Just trying to get Timmy out of the worst. The world doesn't see him in his reason.
I think he's clearly cemented his position. Sorry, mate, what did you say?
I just said they have to try harder to get me out of this worst spot of... Yeah, how to say it? The worst spot of...
I don't know. I'm losing my words. Sorry.
It's okay.
I don't get it.
I did have a question just... obviously, you guys, you know, went in with three pretty strong teams. Did you have a set strategy going into each round as to which of you would go straight in? Or?
We didn't get the pairing, the match sequence right. And like, I think the fourth or fifth game, I don't know. And then the fifth game,
yeah,
we didn't
right.
do the pairing. So probably the fourth game, and the USA explained it to us. Yeah.
Every opponent has to explain how to do the pairings to us, and we fucked up.
Did it like three different things. No.
So basically, you didn't give a fuck who you played. It was, we'll just take three strong players, and whoever we get paired up against, it was more about the player skill.
Like second round, they said don't want engineer, and third round, they said don't care if you give me engineers, and so we just got.
Yeah, there was no real strategy behind it, so it was some gut feelings. This over there is good, I'm going to play over there.
One time there was, we looked at the table, there was one really big year in the middle, and someone wanted it, and I think that was the whole, the one strategic decision we made in the whole tournament, I think. Something like this.
But there was another strategic. So when we got to round four, and Christian and Timmy said, "Oh, we don't want to play on stream. You have to." Thank you, guys. The second strategic decision. So I had to play on stream.
Yeah.
To the wall. Was there like a strategic decision in Timmy? You played Alex Box, didn't you? Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Pardon?
Yeah, it's correct.
You played against Alex Botts. Was that a strategic decision that you were up against Alex?
Actually, I told them that I would like not to play against Union because I think it's one of my worst matchups. But in the end, I didn't really care, so I got Alex, and it was a really good play.
Did you play Pinvice or Ballista into that?
Just going back, I should have played Pinvice because I'm much more comfortable with her. I'm not a big Ballista fan, even playing him four times in this tournament, because he might be the safe option, but I'm not doing too well with him. So
definitely agree with that. He's definitely not the fun option.
Yeah, well, I tried to do it in a safe way. But actually, I should have picked Pinvice just for the comfort zone thing. It worked out because he fucked up, and yeah, it was a really, really good game. Actually, I think we made like two mistakes in total. I fucked up in turn two in a pretty big way because I had to take a parting blow from Mist engaging Ratchet, and I wanted to try to retreat Ratchet so Minx couldn't charge him. And I took a parting blow, 1 point of damage, placed Ratchet, and he was like, "Is he within 12 inches?" Yeah, he is. He was like, "Yeah, I'm charging you." And I was like, damage target.
Yes.
Totally didn't get it. But it was the first game on the second day, so yeah, I had to fuck up something, so...
But I think your condition on the second day was better than the first.
Yeah, because the first was really, really bad.
What? Really? I mean, do you want to give us some insight there, Tim?
I thought I lost my wallet, but I gave it to Dirty Mike. Dirty Mike is the guy from the picture in the elevator with the statement, thanks to this guy, the shaming can begin early. And he got my wallet. So I placed it on the safest spot on the whole tournament. I was pretty fucked up in the end. I played Jamie Perkins at Friday evening. Can't remember shit. I guess I was totally fucked up, like start of turn three or something like this.
Whew. I've noticed on Twitter that there's an element of caution that is starting to creep in. I feel like you might be starting to question your life choices.
Man, these hangovers getting worse and worse, I say. Yeah.
I'm using that as like the intro clip from now on. Every time you come on, man, you are fucking audio gold. It's great. Okay, it's great.
So, can I jump in? So you guys basically only lost one game combined in the whole tournament, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Martin, was that you?
Yeah.
Do you want to explain where you fucked up there?
I fucked up because Christian and Timmy already won, and I had to take a two-die snapshot win, and I said, I don't care, so I missed it.
You hadn't had to.
Yeah, I hadn't. I picked the wrong matchup. I said to Timmy, I can take the Fisherman because I like the mirror. The mirror was going so good for me because he outdamaged me. He has got gutter and I has no gutter. And I lost the game because I don't listen to Timmy.
I don't know. Two-dollar snapshot. That's a pretty cool way to win it.
If it works, yeah, sure.
If it works, yeah. Well, you know, better be lucky than good. Yeah, just ride that luck train all the way through. So, on a whole, like, how did you find the actual event? You know, the teams tournament. We've never been to one. We've seen a lot of Aussies go to the War Machine, the War Machine teams WTC. Like, how did you find the event with all the other nationalities? The Ivory Coast managed to have a team,
and we played them
in round two. That's where I lost my game.
Oh my god.
I think they were pretty good. I think they only lost against USA 1 and us, I guess.
That's true.
Alright.
Yeah, well, they were strong. And for the WTC, I really like this big international team tournaments. I played like the OETC in the beginning and then the WTC for War Machine. And then I jumped to Guild Ball this year. I really like this big international tournaments. It's a lot of fun. It's cool that it's so big. It's gotten so big over the years. I really hope we do it again next year for both games in Warsaw. So, yeah, it's really fun. Everybody should go.
I think they already announced it's Poland next year. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, is it for Guild Ball? I don't know.
Like, there was Huggy, dude named Huggy on Twitter. Basically confirmed it.
Okay, yeah, cool. So the Polish guys, they made an excellent WTC for War Machine a few years back, so I hope they do it again.
We're in the process of just organizing to get an Australian team over. I think if we've got a year to plan, I can't see how we don't get there. So we're pretty pumped for that as well. I love tournaments, and the biggest one I think we've been to has only been, close to 30 people. We just really want to get to a massive one.
I had to leave Germany to get a bigger size tournament as well, so we know that feel, bro. Over here it's pretty different, pretty isolated.
We are.
What I especially like is to play against different metas. It's really a lot different how somebody plays. Over the years, it grows a lot more together. Like, all Europeans in War Machine Hordes play kind of the same. But Guild Ball is so new, it's really different, really new stuff to look out, new thoughts behind games you've never seen in Germany. So it's a lot of fun for me.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, did you want to maybe talk about how you saw different metas compared to your own? You know, did anything across the different metas stand out as particularly interesting to you?
22 got some really cool teams, but internationally, I have to admit, they're playing pretty conservatively most of the time. So I really like the engineers team I played against from Jay Claire. We played Ballista Mirror in the first round. He played Ballista, Mother, Colossus, Velocity, Hoist, and Locus against me. That was a pretty beefy team. I really liked it.
When you say conservatively, Tim, what do you mean? Like sort of defensive style, kill the ball, 8 points on takeout, one goal, that sort of thing?
Yeah, most of the time it... My, at least my opponents did so. And many games were on the point where each of the players could have clocked out or clocked out. So they're really, really slowish games.
And how would you contrast that to the German style? Do you guys favor a more aggressive approach?
Not really, but I think we got at least some players playing really, really aggressively. The only guy who played really aggressively against me was Alex. But yeah, he got a veteran rage lineup against Ballista, so he had to be aggressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't sit back on that.
Most of the guys were pretty defensively.
Martin, you were going to jump in there. Did you want to follow on from that?
I think what the other nations aren't doing is, so fuck this game. Isn't anymore in my favor. I have to go all in. They don't risk anything. You see my game against Pat in the stream, mm-hmm. And do you remember the Zakana activation where I have to get the free strike, the parting blow from Match? I know we had won already because I said fuck it, let's do this. But if I can make it, then I win the game.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I mean, like you see that off the back of Tim's World Champs game last year as well. Has his particular brand of madness permeated, or is this something that you guys just, you know, you do as a matter of course? Like this is part of the practice, this is part of the way you play, quite happy to take calculated risks.
I think it's a player thing. Just a player thing. I never do really risky stuff, or almost never. But I play really aggressively most of the times. And a lot of opponents I think I catch them by surprise, if I'm honest.
So how does that look when you're on the table? Like, you know, just try and take us into a game and give us a sense, and give, I guess, the listeners a sense of, you know, an example of how that would roll out in-game.
I just try to catapult Hammer in the enemy lines, normally first turn. Just one model a little bit too far forward, something like this. Try to get momentum, try to get the next activation, and really have the team behind him to support him, and need to go back somewhere to get, for the next turn, get my new 6-inch bubble to get more influence for my team on Hammer for various benefits. And just this explosive jump into the enemy team, I think it's not calculated by the opponents. I've seen one or two Hammer games on YouTube, Betraps, and I've not have seen him so explosive. There are a few opponents which quite good can handle it, like Smoke or something like that. I need a little bit more time normally, but at some point in the game I will change gears and go all forward with my Hammer and Brick. These are the two guys I normally play in every game. With Tough Fight, it's, by the way, one of the best or the best ability trait in the game. Just be able to withstand so much punishment that I get my chance to do more, take more aggression to the opponent.
I think maybe that also speaks of, you talk about the slow, methodical ball-killing game. I mean, I think simply by doing that, it's counter to what ball-killing is anyway. So you just got, you know, you're tending to go in there and start the fight. And I think people who don't even want to play that way wouldn't even think to do that. Yeah. Sounds like just simply the play style, you know, is fundamentally different in where you want to be on the board.
Yeah, just I try to position my miniatures perfectly, and if there is one a little bit position off on the opponent, this is what normally gives me the entrance to do something, even if it's like a puppet from the Morticians. Just stands a little bit too wide, a little bit too much forward, and then I jump in on him. I don't know. Just
get the momentum.
A little bit momentum, and with a whole knockback thing, I'm then in his lines and can do. Hammer can do whatever he wants as long as he has a friendly within 6 inches and is in the enemy lines. It's very difficult to stop. In my stream game on round 5, my opponent Daniel, really good, has Brick and Mallet engaging my hammer, so that he can't move out without a knockdown. And this is what I mean with not playing risky. I didn't move Hammer there, don't have 5 influence on him, and don't move him out there, because I try the whole turn, and I think over 2 turns, maybe, to get something to help me mitigate the situation, bait a brick counter charge so that tower can beat back brick to my hammer so that he has a new way to engage. Just waited, and try to get on from there.
Yeah, this makes me want to play hammer.
Mm. Yeah, just do it. It's a lot of fun.
So I picked up hammer ages ago. I've played him on and off, and it is one of the most fun teams to play. Just basically punching people down, pushing them off the board, whatever you want. It is loads of fun.
Yeah, the movement shenanigans from knockback are so varied and so much you can do a lot of shitty stuff with it. In one game, I punched the enemy miniatures before Cosette so they can't charge, so she can't charge anymore. Huh. Was built up a big gas activation from Cosette, and Hammer goes in gas activation of mine and punched other miniatures before Cosette so there's no charge anymore. Something like this.
Put him in a way. I like it.
Yeah.
Have fun. Be a dick. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering of the other teams you guys saw, were there any kind of combinations of three guilds that you thought worked quite well? Or were the matchups, I know you guys obviously went in with zero plans and didn't even know how the process worked, were the matchups more determined by just player skill, like the more skillful teams seem to win through?
I actually think Guild Ball is a game where you don't have any really, really bad matchups. Even if it's a not as good as it could be matchup, it's still playable. So even in a bad matchup, you could win if you're doing better. So that's not the same like in War Machine, where basically the pairing gives you a clue if it's going to be a good game or if it's going to be a total massacre. And that isn't the case in Guild Ball. So I don't think it's too important to match these teams good or just having a lineup that targets something. So I don't think you need this. And if you aren't comfortable in playing something, you could dodge this in this system. But I don't think it's the most important thing after all.
Yeah, tried the first two rounds. I tried actively to get morticians and it worked because I feel especially power, especially advantage over morticians, just because I play a lot against morticians, so I knew what they do. And
yeah, you're just more comfortable against those, and that makes complete sense. You just know how that matchup's going to go.
And and a little bit of because I thought international players would probably play Obelus against Masons, which I think is a big mistake, and Obelus is really bad against Masons, and nobody should play him against them. Just play Skelpig, it's much better.
Okay. Well, explain that. Explain what part of that that you think is really bad.
The first thing is a Tech 5 paired with a Mason's armor. Obelus just he does the same thing against every team, but everyone knows how to play around it. And against Mason's armor, he doesn't do enough by himself. He can do his Puppet Master stuff, but I think we all know how to play against it now. So nothing new there. The rest of the team, again, does not do enough against Masons if they are positioned correctly. And Skalpel is a real pain in the ass for Masons. He has a problem with counterattacks, sure, but there is, again, correct position is possible to play around it. Just get there that if you get counterattacked, you can dodge another miniature, dodge between two miniatures, use your legendary if you haven't, something like this. And the fact that she can dart in, she's so much out that you can, without problems, get a toot up, even in later turns, and then she can dart in, just take two-thirds or three-quarters health of one miniature, and with dodge and heroic, just gets out again, and then she's again so far away that the Masons player really has problems get to her, and then she can drag the game like this, and it's really, really frustrating for Masons.
No, I like that. I mean, anatomical as well into the armor.
Yeah, it's just anatomical in combination with the your defense and tac 7, and it's really good. Just put 6 influence on here and start hitting people and go away, and Like I said, it's ridiculous.
Guild Ball strategy. Put influence on someone, start hitting them. I like this.
I would say another big point for Guild Ball is not even the matchup, but Guild Ball can swing one way or the other so fast, and you always have to keep on playing and never give up. In my first round against England 3, I was down 0-9 and I won 12-11 because I never give up, and you have to play, keep on playing, and if you win, it's okay. If you lose, it's okay too, but you have to keep on playing. This, I think most players are, oh, I'm down 8-0, I can't win, let's shake hands.
Yeah, no, I agree. You definitely play it out. Can you explain that comeback? Do you remember that game pretty well?
Oh, Timmy will kill me for this. We played, and this game will take about 14, 15 turns. We played Fisherman Mirror, and he got the ball. And we run around like 8 or 9 turns, and he doesn't do anything. And I can't do anything because he has got the ball. But I was up 15 minutes on clock, so I said, after an hour, I will win with a clock. And then he start beating me, and I'm down 0-9. And then I have to take a risk. I killed everything greed. And after that, he has not enough damage. So I killed the ball, killed another player, and made 8 points on clock.
Nice.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Viable strategy.
That's pretty good.
What you shouldn't forget is, I think Guild Ball is a really swingy game. If someone has someone really fast gets a lot of points and has really something going for him, and a little bit mistake, a little position error, or bad dice roll, and all of this can go south, and the other one can make a lot of points fast.
Absolutely. I mean, you can lose one roll off. I had a game where I was scored a goal, won a negative roll off. Scored another goal straight away and went from, 8-2 to, 10-8. Just getting 2 goals and 2 activations. So, absolutely.
My game against Jay in the first round, actually, he didn't play it. Colossus, he played Compound because I remember my final goal run. I was like 4-7 behind and clocking out because first game of Saturday, I was sleepy, I was hungover,
drunk,
still drunk,
I totally clocked out. It was absolutely unnecessary because I saw the clock run down, but my brain couldn't handle this information. I was just only staring at the clock and clocking out just at the end of an activation. I could have just swapped time and I would have had one activation more or something like this, but I wasn't able to do so in this moment, and I clocked out and had to take a counter charge from Compound against Velocity, who just made it barely into 8 inches to the goal, so he only had to hit me twice, push me up 8 inches. I was defensive standing and in cover. So he had 8 dice, needing 2 sixes to win the game on spot because I was timing out. Missed it, just did 1 damage, and I took the goal shot, hit it, and won. And so this was, the nail-biter game of Guild Ball till now, because I had only 1 option left in the end, and it was a really, really good game.
Was a nail-biter for Spectator too, Kenny. I can assure you, I really hated you both on this day.
What?
Oh, I love it.
Tim, you live a charmed life.
Yeah.
We're always saying to each other, better lucky than good, so maybe that's a thing. I don't know.
Yeah, that was basically luck because I was totally messing it up with the time clock management.
Your vast consumption of alcohol the night before may have had something to, was it a factor?
I think I could have played faster, maybe. Yeah, but...
you were like 2 minutes more at the end, and then you just...
Yeah, it's been better, but I guess it's okay. Might be positive for my karma if I'm drinking the night before.
Right.
I don't know.
I find I've played
Should
better.
Should be it, yeah. Was it this game where you missed the clock?
Yes, that's what
yeah, yeah.
Oh my god. I love how Tim hammered is still better than like the majority of us sober though. Like, that's the thing.
Fuck yeah, man. But only hammered, yeah.
Oh, very good. So what about the location itself, and you know, catching up with other dudes, and you know, were there shenanigans after hours that you want to go into? I mean, I feel that the answer to this is probably yes, but I'm not sure that Tim can remember what happened. So I'm wondering whether somebody else could maybe share a tale.
Christian,
yeah, just the first night where you know the guy in the elevator, and Tim already told how he missed his purse,
yeah.
And they were in the room and just searched it, and then we, like, two German teams went through the hotel and searched everything after the purse, and it was like in the back of the guy who was before in the elevator, now in our room sitting on the ground. So it's like
every
tournament, so with
Dirty Mike.
Why is he Dirty Mike?
Yeah, because of the Dirty Mike from the other guys. The homeless guy having group sex in bands and company.
Right.
That's good. But you seem like you cleaned up all right towards the end there, Tim. Pulled it all together. Like, did you have your saline drip this time around?
I was perfectly fine because my pills started to work, and I was actually in a good mood after this because I wasn't feeling like throwing up, and everything was fine in the end.
What was your favorite round of the tournament? Did you have like one particular round that stood out that you?
Round four. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, tell us about that.
What would my teammate say? It was round four, or Timmy?
I don't know. I really liked
round one.
Yeah, round one.
Yeah. Against the first round. England 3, which became third, I think. Because we read England 3, thought should work out somehow, and then Timmy just nail-bited it, and my opponent controlled Hammer for a long time really good, and it was a difficult game. So yeah, what was a really nice start into the tournament. Difficult from the beginning.
Yeah,
it just got easier after that.
You played the hard game first, and then you just progressively got easier.
Yeah, for the rest of the day, and then on the next on Sunday there were more difficult games.
Any sort of standout opponents for you? Any players who you sort of would say you really enjoyed your games against?
Man, I really enjoyed every single game. Yeah.
Yeah. Alex, me too.
Was a pretty nice guy. I really enjoyed playing him. Jay from England 3. I played him already before at Vengeance. He's a really, really cool guy. And I played the Rickard, the Swedish Nationals winner.
Mm-hmm.
Cool guy as well. And in the end, I played one of the German guys, Werner, in a pin-wise mirror match, a perfect mirror match. It happened that we picked the same teams and played each other. That was pretty cool as well because I was playing pin-wise and I felt way better playing Pinwise than playing Ballista. I should have totally done it before, but yeah. And the guy from the Ivory Coast was a really relaxed guy as well, so I basically had five really cool games.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, I had also five nice games, but I think my best game was against Pat in round four because I never seen somebody doing things he did with his Brewers. It was amazing. He's very good with Brewers, and he can do things I didn't ever think of. He was crazy good.
Not thinking.
Yeah, I imagine you boys get together and it's a bit of a sledge fest. Like a lot of shit is thrown. When you say Pat was playing differently to what you'd seen, like how do you mean, Martin?
He controlled the ball all the time, and he was so careful with his positioning, and he, as the other Brewers players, always fire Tepper and Hooper at you, and you can easily deal with them. And he didn't do this. He was very, very looking for the ball. He wanted to give me a goal, and all his moves were, he was like two or three moves ahead in everything what he did, and that was very impressive.
It did look like you went up early, but then he just slowly did, claw the game back, and it looked like there was a definite thought process to how he thought he would get back in the game, which was pretty impressive to see.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
I mean, that was a game where clock was really important as well. I mean, I think you won on clock in the end, didn't you?
Yeah, I win. Yeah. On clock.
So did you force him then into, I guess, a lot of decisions that he had to think carefully about? And do you think that was a factor in the game?
I wasn't sure if this matchup was planned by the Americans, because Fisherman against Brewers is normally not so good for the Brewers. And I built up early a lot of pressure on him, and he was not... He told Vince and Alex after 15, 20 minutes, oh, I don't win this game. And he was pretty sad, and because he can't, he did two turns, I think he did nothing important. Because of that, I think maybe they should give me wins or something like this.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if they had, I know you guys obviously had zero strategy going into the matchup, and you'd only just worked it out at this point, but they maybe had the strategy of throw one guy to the, you know, to the Wolves as such, and then the other two get matchups they prefer. Like maybe none of them wanted to go into Fish, and so they just threw one of them in, thinking the other two got the better matchups.
Yeah, I think possibly.
I mean, as a thought process, I don't think that's necessarily the right or wrong one, given that we all kind of agree that player skills the determining factor. But, I wonder if that's a strategy some of the teams took in.
Yeah, I guess so, because I think these might have been possibly even the worst matchups we should or we could have get. So, because I wasn't totally comfortable playing Veteran Graves because Veteran Rage, because he's basically doing so much damage that all my defensive tech, my tough fight, counter attacks, reanimate and stuff doesn't really matter. Because he kills me anyway, so yeah, I think that Vince trained a lot against Masons before. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I was just going to say that Alchemists into Masons seems pretty good for the Alchemist player.
And I think I've heard that he trained a lot against Masons before and thought it would be a pretty good matchup, but yeah.
But I think he needed to look up Veteran Harmony.
Yeah,
Veteran Harmony isn't a thing in every country, so...
Yeah, but I think he made a fatal mistake at the beginning, a little bit positional mistake, so Hammer get in his first round. That should normally not happen. And then it was... Then I got like a 6-point lead and was a little bit easier from then. But he played his Veteran Catalyst.
Yeah.
Really far in the backfield, and this is what really threw me. It was difficult because he just threatened a big counter charge for everything which got in, and I really needed to protect Hammer from this. That is something I have never seen played like this before. Normally the whole Alchemist team stands back, and a Veteran Catalyst or a normal Catalyst, they go for and threaten. But he just stayed with his Veteran Catalyst behind all his shooty guys and threatened a counter charge, and that was really, really difficult to get in there. And get in there and then try to stay and try to survive.
But to be fair, I think it's basically the idea behind the design of Veteran Catalyst, because he's not a frontliner at all. So he's basically doing the cleanup work if someone's going in and engages you. But I think most of the guys playing him don't play him really careful, because you need to be careful with him. He's super squishy, even if he's a really big up pump guy.
It's how it should be played. It's really annoying.
Yeah.
I do feel like that smoke gun line game, that ranged game, is really strong. You know, just sitting Vet Cat in the backfield waiting for the opportunity seems like the smart way to play. You know, in the same way that you've got a model like Boar or, you know, any of those backfield sweepers who have low def, you know, it's Cena as well. Like, you hold off, just wait for your moment.
But he's actually the best, because he can go in, do his witness me stuff, and if you're winning the initiative, he can go back again in on another position on the field, and maybe gets another witness meet-off. Mm-hmm. So this could get really swingy, really, really quickly. So
perfect snowball piece. Black. And I think the smoke gun guy is the best gun guy in the game at the moment. I think it's better than Ballistas.
Oh, fuck
what
you.
What about Theron?
Theron alone is not a gun guy. But he's strong, no doubt about it.
I think you're right. I think the Vet Catalyst, so I've played quite a bit of Alchemists, so I've gone off them recently, but the Vet Cat, the beauty of it is that if you're throwing the AoEs out, even if they come into one of your models, because you've generally got, you know, the poisonous fumes or the auras, then they put the condition on themselves just coming in and punching you, and then, you know, then it's a no-brainer when Vet Catalyst just comes over the top and blows them up.
Yeah.
It does seem like the game has shifted to a ranged metagame. So, like, ranged control or ranged damage seems quite strong now. You know, and you compare that to, I suppose, you know, the scoring game that we had prior to that. The game seems to have slowed down, or at least is amenable to a slower game. I mean, do you guys see that as well?
Yeah, you're right. Yes. We talked it over when we choose our teams, and we said that during the tournament, the game is slower and slower and slower, and the good teams are the teams who can control you on range, like fishermen, like hunters, like alchemists for sure, engineers with ballista. These are the good teams because they can take what they're given, and then the game starts again for them. And you can look, oh, I can take this one, nice, come to me, I punch you, points for me. And then we look again, like I did it with Pat or Timmy did it the whole tournament with this opponent. Just take what you're given and wait.
Mm. For example, I think I had the most goals for our team, and I think by quite a margin. So
yep, sure. As five, I guess.
I had just four goals.
Yeah, I think I had nine.
And Martin, you had four, did you say?
Yeah, but I
you're playing scored. Fish. What are you doing wrong?
I'm scoring on clock. Yeah. I like punching people, and I like scoring on clock. That's how I play a fisherman. And I think in this way, I have credit to give to Alex Spots, because he says the ball is too valuable to give up. And if you have the ball, you can hold it, save it. And with my fisherman, with lure and cause a strike, I can take whatever the opponent is willing to give me. I score, and then I repeat it.
It is a gross thing.
I think the whole point on all these teams, the whole range control stuff, is that you don't have to commit something. So you're not basically trading, because you're not investing a miniature and send it in and make it happen or something like this. But you're basically standing back, doing your stuff, and the opponent has to come to you to get the ball. So these are about one or two rounds. You can basically fire and get conditions on them, range damage on them, without any kind of retaliation. Yeah, it's basically the safest route to play Guild Ball, I guess, at the moment. But
yeah,
on the other hand, there are players like Hammer, which are pretty good against these kind of teams, because most of the time they're lacking these burst kind of damage if you're not setting it up. So a wild hammer appearing in your team, knocking someone out with influence on it, is a pretty, pretty shitty experience.
Sorry, Christian, what were you going to say?
I think at the moment there are the teams like Fish and Engies and Alchemists and Hunters, which the other teams, when you play other team against them, you need to get in there, and they dictate the game, and the other teams, like the Butcher, like the Masons, they try to play around this and try to get in there. And I think this is at the meta at the moment, the teams who control and the teams to try to break the control.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary.
And the teams who try to break the control, I think at the moment they are a little bit more difficult to play, because you can't make mistakes.
It does point to I think for tournament players, you need to have a set of skills that incorporates clock management and the ability to sort of play long games over the course of a tournament. And fatigue is a real thing. You know, so I think, you know, you talk about control play being dominant, but I also think clock play, you know, and the ability to last the distance playing a team that requires quite intensive thinking. Long game, long day, you're going to be tired by the time you get to the final table, if you get there at all. I find that really interesting, just in terms of the shift that's occurred. You know, whereas if you were playing Shark, you know, pre-errata, it's just bang, bang, bang. You know, you either win quick or you don't win at all. And Midas as well, probably a better example of winning quite quickly on a scoring style game.
I can validate that.
I'm just conscious that it's late where you guys are, so I don't want to keep you up too late. Do you guys have anything you sort of want to say by way of closing remark?
Yeah, maybe that I really enjoy the whole community. I think Gearball is a pretty fine spot at the moment in terms of community, because all of these guys were so cool. Yeah. There wasn't a single person I didn't like at all or something like this. And this basically happens like every single War Machine tournament before, that there are some people that aren't too cool to play against. So you have to play against them, and they're basically shitty people you don't want to spend time with. Yeah. And if someone screaming the whole time at the table and cursing and really furious or trying to cheat or something like this. Yeah, but the spirit of sportsmanship is pretty big in Guild Ball. I really like basically every single one that was there. So that was pretty impressive, to be fair.
I don't have the same negative experience as Timmy for War Machine tournaments. But I also need to say, the guys I played, the guys I met, they all were fantastic in the WTC, and hope to see them again next year. And at the moment, Guild Ball is at least one of my favorite games, so seeing forward to playing more of it.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I would agree with Timmy and and Christian. Some of the podcasters are... they make the opinions and they have their own way, but in reality they are totally nice, and I enjoyed my game with Pat at the most, and I could play Pat 5 times a week, because you see it in the stream when I forgot something, or he, oh no, no problem, and it was just a great time.
Well said.
Feel a bit, just play what you want and don't take the opinion of others, just play it.
Yeah, play what's fun, enjoy it, exactly. There's a whole bunch of Guild Ball love going on right now. I can just feel it. Hey, do you guys, have you got your nationals coming up this weekend? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is the German Championship coming up?
Yeah.
Game on. I guess good luck to you all. I assume you're all going.
It's basically shrinking from week to week, so I think we're down to like 8 players or something like this.
Jesus.
Shit. Dave, let's get flights. Let's go.
No, I don't want to get smashed by Germans. Fuck. It's a long way to go.
I want to get smashed with Germans.
Yes.
Nah, brilliant. Well, yeah, good luck to the 8 players that rock up. I think, you know, if we can get this podcast out quick enough, we can get a whole bunch of people from the rest of Europe over there.
Yeah, sure.
You can smash all them.
Any hot predictions as to who might take it out?
I would bet on Christian.
Yeah, like, what if I play Union or Pharma? I have a new Pharma box.
Nice. Have you played a bit of Pharmas yet?
A little bit, yes. But with my own Pharmas, I have tomorrow my first game. I won them at the WGC, so new box, new stuff.
Let's get them out there.
New things to play.
I might actually try hard the last time with Engineers this year.
Yep. And then move on. Some Hunter action, maybe?
Yeah.
If I play Hammer, then it will be the last for this season, I think. And I really are excited for the Blacksmiths. I love how they evolve. I really want to try them, want to play them.
Yeah, me too. After Hearth and Alloy were revealed, oh my god, they look good. They look like so much.
I don't know if Hearth is so good, but Alloy is.
Alloy looks brilliant. He's a mad dog. Yeah. Alright, well, that's probably a pretty good spot. Well, it's a pleasure talking with you all, and I have a feeling that we may be talking to one of you again soon.
Hopefully in person.
Hopefully,
someday.
Yeah.
You have to talk to Christian. He's too polite to tell you that he has lost only one tournament game in Guild Ball in his whole life. So I think you talk to Christian again.
Right, right. Well,
that's where the money is, the smart money.
Yeah.
Like I said, like a million times before, he must have something like tabletop autism or something like this.
That's true.
Like I told you, it's not tabletop, it's gaming autism. Don't care. It's fun.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Thank you, gents. We appreciate your
thanks
time.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. And congratulations on your win. That's incredible.
Thank you.
Great tournament.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Good one.
Bye-bye.
We have on the line all the way from deepest, darkest Stockport. Rumor is he's sitting there in a dressing gown and nothing else. It is the one and only Stockport Fast Talk champion, Jamie Perkins himself. Jamie, how are you?
I'm very good, David. How are you guys?
The thought of you in a dressing gown makes me pretty happy.
That'd be a first for somebody, at least. The only person that makes happy is me.
My congratulations to Mrs. Perkins.
Yeah, she doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, we also have Campbell here. Campbell?
How you going, Jamie?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thank you.
Have you sent my bikini back yet?
No, I quite like it, so I've kept it around for a little while.
I reckon he's wearing it. So for the listeners, I think it's episode 20, somewhere around that, Jamie put on a bikini for us for a little photo shoot. Wasn't as arousing as Giblin's Emerald Eyes, but very close.
No, I mean, I'd say it was all the skill and the photographer there. I'm actually a very bad model, so.
Well, it didn't look that way. Anyway, yeah. So we thought we'd get you on the line. Obviously, we've just had WTC not that long ago. We've had a little bit of a chat to the crazy Germans, and we thought we'd get you on. We haven't spoken to you as such in context of as a gamer, basically. So we know you're a mad Hunters player. So I was wondering, firstly, you know, what was your overall experience like?
So I have previous experience of the WTC. I've been there before playing different game systems. So I'm a bit of a veteran of the event itself. But obviously, this is the first time it's run for Guild Ball. And it's always been a fantastic event all around. Like the it's just, I think there were about 500 people there in total. So 100 gamers there for Guild Ball. You know, other staff members taking, there as well. Not staff members, you know what I mean? People helping out.
Yeah.
And it's just, everyone just has a great time. Like it's tradition for people to turn up. Sort of over the course of Friday, people start turning up from sort of lunchtime up to the evening, and people playing games already as soon as they arrive. Friday is all about man hugs and going around and just greeting people and seeing people, you know, that you haven't seen for a year or so. And it's great to see people. And then obviously in the evenings, you know, people tend to drink a little bit more and silly stories happen. I mean, one of the things that's I believe a tradition of the WCC is for a human pyramid to get constructed either on the Saturday or the Sunday evening, and they add a tier to it every year. So at some point we're just expecting someone to die, but yeah, it's a great thing to be a part of, both gaming and from a social experience. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's there isn't really anything else quite like it. It's also for people that have tried, people like playing at gaming events. There's such a big difference between playing a solo event and playing in a team. Playing in a team is just a completely, like, it's winning and losing together. It just feels so nice because normally you're sort of, everyone else is your opponent or like your enemy or whatever, but playing together as a team is just such a cool thing, and you get to sort of rally behind people and go, come on, we need this, or you've lost your game that round, but your team have carried you through, and that feels nice as well. It's just it's a whole very different thing, and it's great, really. So
I like that. I like the fact that, and I noticed this with the Germans, that there are situations that come up where you'll go for a jankier role or something a little bit different if you know that your team's kind of won. You know, you can push the boundaries of the game as well and make it more thematic or more enjoyable, you know, go for those two dice snapshots, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then when it comes down to like that final game, because we play in teams of three in the Guild Ball WTC, as happened in our first round, I lost my first game, and then Bryce won his first game, which meant it all came down to Jay, who was playing Hunters versus Butchers in the middle table, and it was like, oh my god, how's he doing? He's doing well, and it's a little bit more pressure for him, but it just means so much more to you. And it came down to him going, you know what, Princess has the ball, and Princess has influence. I'm going to go for a shot, and then just like. And we were just like, just drumming the table going, oh my god, he's going to do it. And he rolled through the dice. And bless him, Jay hasn't played, like, because he's our ops manager, so he doesn't get to play all that much. But he has a functional, like, knowledge of how to play the game, I'd guess. And we gave him a bit of practice on the run up to it. But he threw his two dice because he bonus timed it, rolled two threes, and then collapsed on the floor and went, oh my god, no, I've messed it up. And we're like, Jay, tapping's a rule. You've won. He went,
Brilliant.
About 20 people watching that moment, and it was just really, really funny. Stuff like that, moments like that are really good for BTC.
I love that. You've kind of just stolen my question of favourite moment. Were there any other cool kind of, you know, gaming moments that you like?
Oh, yes, but I guess they'll come up sort of out of the discussion. Yeah. It'd be difficult to pinpoint a favourite, but there's just really some. I played 5 matches over the weekend and enjoyed every single one of them for totally different reasons. I mean, the game I played at the end was a really nice thing as well, because I played a guy called Jacob for one of the US teams. I think he was on USA too. And so he's someone that he said he got into wargaming by reading my battle reports from previous gaming systems and stuff. So he's someone that's like, for lack of a better phrase, followed my.
Is he a fan? He's a fan. That's what
I was trying not to say that, but sure. Let's
also, that's fine.
So he came up and spoke to me on the Saturday evening, and we had a good talk about previous gaming systems and stuff, and Guild Ball, and how much he's enjoyed it, and how much his local meta's getting on and stuff. And he was actually a late stand-in for the USA team. Someone else dropped, and he was able to come in at the last moment. And he was just really excited to be there. And then we got to play on the Sunday, which was really nice, because we'd had that really good conversation the day before and introduced ourselves to each other and stuff. And it was a game that I didn't particularly want, because Corsair is a very difficult matchup for me playing with my hunters. But I thought, like, it's one of those moments where I was like, okay, none of us are really going to get matches that we want this round, so it's fine. I guess I'll take this Corsair match that I don't want, so you guys can have some more fair matches. You can have some 50-50s. And I don't think I can play a game of Guild Ball better. I played absolutely out of my skin, where taking out Corsair for the Hunters is just such a difficult task. When I finally brought him down, it started with Theron activation first, because I was winning the initiative most turns. A full stack on Theron, a full stack on Hearn, and a full stack on Jakar. and finally brought him down. And to get to him, you've got to take out Veteran Siren first because of the Dread Gaze aura, and you can't take out Veteran Siren until you've taken out Kraken, because she's given him Defense 5 and she's just annoying to take out. So there's a whole chain of events you've got to get to lead up to even getting to attack Corsair in the first place. And I managed to battle the game through to a point where it was 8-8. It was 8 all, and I had about 16 seconds left on my clock, and Jakar has the ball in the middle of the table. I just thought, he's in range to just sprint and shoot. He's going to be engaged. I'm only going to throw 2 dice at it. I have a bit of wiggle time where I could sort of make an attack against someone and try and bounce off them, but there's so many 2-inch melee zones around there that I don't want to mess around with it, so I'm just going to run up and take the shot. So he runs up, takes the shot, 2 dice shot, bonus timed it, missed the shot, and I was like, ah, there's... Had a chance at winning the game. There's nothing else I can really do there. And I timed out when he went into the game. But it was just a fantastic way to end the weekend for me, because it was like someone I'd met the day before. We had a really good conversation. Then got to play the day after. Played an absolutely fantastic game. Jacob himself as an opponent. It's very difficult to be able to be in tournaments. It's very difficult to be able to be both an extremely polite opponent and play a very clean game. It can be quite difficult there because of like gaming etiquette and stuff. But he's someone that's a master of both at the same time. And it was just made for an absolutely like a pleasure of a game to play, even though I lost it at the end.
And no, just that sounds really good.
Yeah, the fact that I nearly managed to pull it out of the fire at the end, but even though I didn't. But yeah, so that's probably my favourite game of the weekend, that one, probably the final one.
Very nice. I have jumped the gun to ask that question, so we'll dial it back and start from the beginning. Your team makeup. So you took the Hunters. Do you want to explain your team? And one of the really interesting things I want to find out more about, something the Germans gave me nothing on, was the selection process, how you guys went about picking your matchups each round.
Well, I imagine they went about it a little bit more of a scientific effort than we did. I mean, it was, for us, it was a case of...
Spoiler, Perkins, they didn't.
Fair enough. I mean, to be fair, Timmy's team, that makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
But for us, it was just a case of, what are you comfortable playing? Are there any of those lists that you don't particularly like on a personal level? It's like, if yes or no to any of these above questions, and that kind of influenced it on the fly at the time. We didn't do much pre-planning. It was just a question of let's just play some games. Because we don't play test. When we play to Skill Ball, we don't play test on the clock. So playing on the clock is kind of the biggest weakness of Steamforged staff teams. So in the weeks running up to the event, we weren't really looking so much at what matchups we didn't want. We were just trying to play better on the clock. That was the main practice that we were doing. So we kind of just did list selection on the fly. So like, for example, in round one, we were looking at things and just think like, I'm kind of okay into this. You don't want that, so try and avoid that. And one of the things that I suggested, I'm doing a very roundabout answer to this question, but there's a point to it. One of the things I suggested to TOs at the end is to, in their opening sort of welcome to all the players, was very funny, by the way, and they had a sort of scripted thing where they introduced all the teams and then told a joke about everyone individually, which was really cool. I've never seen anyone do that before, but they did it very well. They didn't actually explain the matchup process during their opening thing, so we ended up playing three or four different versions of the matchup process throughout the weekend, because we kind of got to the table and went, what do you guys think it is? We think it's this. Cool, let's just play that then. So that was the other thing, that we couldn't really do much pre-planning, because we kind of had to just judge list selection on the fly versus what version of the matchup process that we played at the time.
Yeah, that was the German story too. They said they didn't even work out what was going on till about round four.
Yeah. But that's to be expected, you know, in year one of such an event. I imagine they'll clean that stuff up in the future years. But yeah, it was just like, what do you want to play? What do you not want to play? I actually ended up playing sort of three of the games that were a bit more difficult for me. So Smoke Alchemists can be a bit difficult for
everyone. Yeah.
And that was my first game, Smoke Alchemists. And to top it off, I kicked off in all five of my matches, but I'm comfortable with that because I tried to plan for that a little bit. I have a very aggressive turn one kickoff. But it relies entirely upon Theron hitting one of his two shots with his bow, and he missed both of them. So to outline sort of how important that is for how I play the game, my lineup into all five games was the same, because I have like a fixed lineup when I kick off, and it varies a little bit more when I receive the ball, but I ended up kicking off all five times. So it's Theron, Fahad, Jakar, Zerola, Hearn, and Minx. And the reason I play that team is twofold. It's because I can do a very aggressive turn one, and my influence allocation is very straightforward, which is Jakar's full, Hearn's full, the rest on Theron, nobody else gets anything else. And it means that my influence allocation, like time slot, is about 3 seconds every turn. So I can save a bit of time there, which is, as I said before, is a bit of a weakness for us in general. Anyway, so on turn one, I'll do that same allocation. Sort of three on Jakar, three on Hearn, full on Theron. Burn a couple of activations with Fahad and Minx and just sort of move up and position up the table. And then Theron will go place a forest down for Hearn, who has kicked off, so he's already a bit up the table, and try and just sort of put some snares out and get some momentum. The reason it's important for him to get momentum is because then he can use his heroic Blessing of the Sunfather on Zerola.
Zerola, yeah.
Later in the turn, she then moves up Jakar with Midnight Offering, and then my last two activations of the turn are Hearn and Jakar, and they will just pick a target and just try and annihilate it. They won't try and kill it so much. You want to just try and win the initiative for turn two, put some decent damage out on people, put snares and knockdowns all over the place. And what that does is, if you can win the initiative for turn two, then you have a number of fairly easy takeout targets. And it's important to take out a player at the top of turn two rather than at the end of turn one, because if you kill them at the top of two, they've probably lost an activation for the turn. They might even have lost some influence if they put influence on the model, and they are also losing that model for turn two. If you take a model out during turn one, they will obviously come back for turn two, whereas if you kill them during turn two, then they've lost that model for that turn as well. So it can give you that plan can give you a very aggressive start of the game when you're kicking off with hunters. But the problem is, if you miss one of those two bow shots with Theron, then it all falls down, because you can't do that Midnight Offering on Jakar, and he's just sort of sat there going, well, I can't go anywhere now, I'm not going to be in range, unless the opponent just walks a model into my charge range, which is unlikely.
Relying on bad opponents is not a good tactic, correct?
No, absolutely. But I mean, you can always just pick your targets carefully. You can waste a few activations with Fahad and Minx, so they can move some models forward for you. So hopefully you'll just try and pick a lower defense model, because all you're trying to do is put some snare out and just generate any momentum at all. And it works all the time.
I mean, generally, most sides are going to have, at worst, some Death 4 models, right? So theoretically, got a pretty good chance with a sprint and a couple of shots. But hey, yeah, dice go bad too, so...
Yeah, so in that first game, he actually kicked off with, he didn't kick off with Smoke. He did an early activation with, he did an early activation, collected the ball, and then passed it to Smoke, who then dodged forwards. So I was like, great, Smoke's off the start line. I can probably hit her with a snipe and drop a kickstart down, because he's looking for a turn one goal. So I moved up Theron and did both like a pinned shot and a snipe shot into Smoke and missed both of them. It's like, cool. So not only is that bad for me not generating momentum, but he's also definitely going to score that goal now.
Yeah, exactly.
Later on in the turn, he then scored not on his last activation. So I was like, cool, I can pass the ball out to Jakar now, and Jakar still might be able to get in because he can pass the ball and just get into someone, misses the pass. Just give me something. So that was never going to be an easy game at that point, but I managed to I made it our game, and I think I lost that one 12-6.
How'd the team go that round?
So in that round, that was the round where Jay scored his winning goal with Princess at the end. So Bryce won his game. I think it was Corsair into... No, it was not. It wasn't. It was Shark into Masons, I think, maybe. I can't remember. I know that it was Team France. And then we had Philip Butchers into Theron Hunters in the middle. And so Jay, at the start of every round, it was a question of Jay was like, I don't know what these guys do. What should I do? So we're just like, quick 2 seconds of tactics. It's like, play Boiler. Put Swift Dance on Philip, put Tooled Up on Philip, and then Hunters don't like dealing with that. Go. So he just did that every round. and it worked for him, because he's elite. The thing he does know how to do with Philip is play her very, very aggressively, and that's also like something that Hunters have a difficult time stopping, particularly if she's clearing the snares and being defense six because of Swift Dance all the time. So that worked out for him in most of his games. So it came down to that Princess tapping shot for him, and it ended up winning the round for us, which was great. So I got carried that round. And Jay, the guy that was much less practiced than me, ended up carrying me, which they obviously never let me forget, which is great.
Shout out to Jay. You're the real hero.
Absolutely.
Nice. So round two, who'd you guys get?
So round two. I can remember the teams. I can't necessarily remember the order. I know at some point we played Daniel Nauss's Germany team, and I'm pretty sure that was round two.
Yeah. Was it round two? So tell us about that round. That'd be good.
Yeah, that was round two.
I mean, there's a lot going on about the German meta and how janky and different they are to everyone else.
Yeah, the thing I keep telling them, because we do have a couple of playtest groups in Germany, and the thing I keep telling them in general whenever I speak to like German players, German playtesters, is you guys are great. You obviously know what you're doing and you play very well, as has just been proved, A, by Timmy winning the World Championships, and B, by them just winning the WTC. But they're really quiet. They don't... In general, it's a very difficult gaming group for us to keep tabs on, particularly because none of us at Steamforge Games fluently speak German. And so they have a lot of their own sort of German-speaking forum set up. And it's just generally quite difficult to get information out of them. It's difficult to get tournament results out of them. And it's... Whereas, like, the American meta, for instance, speaks English, and whenever they win an event, they scream to the high heavens about it because they want the world to know, which is great for us because we get to see the tournament results and we get to know what's going on. The Germans don't do that. They kind of know to themselves what's strong and what's not, and they don't really tell anybody else, which we'd kind of like to know a little bit more from them. but that's fine. But we do know that they're obviously very competent gamers for a number of reasons. Anyway, so we played Daniel Nauss's team, and I got matched against a guy called Werner. He was playing Blister Engineers. Now, the main problem I had here is that I played a practice game against Timmy on the Friday evening.
Yes.
Timmy doesn't remember this game.
is this the game where Tim was so drunk that he couldn't actually flip the clock over to you?
Yes, I think so. He had two helpers, one of which was Daniel Nauss. Was basically telling him when things were going wrong and telling him what he couldn't do. Like, Timmy, that's not a rule in the game, or you've run out of influence, Timmy, to me tax. And I was very, very glad that Daniel Nauss was sat there that evening, because that game would not have legally finished otherwise. Anyway, so I played a practice game against Timmy on the Friday, and he played the exact same Ballista lineup as Werner did. And Werner was sat watching the game with a laser focus. So he knew exactly what I was going to do, and he played the exact same lineup as Timmy. I ended up losing the game against Timmy 12-10. I was just like happy to get 10 points off him, even in his completely drunk state. I was like, I can't even beat you when you're drunk. And then all of his mates were going, no, Jamie, it's harder when he's drunk. He's better. So I was like, cool, at least I got 10 points off the champ. But Werner sat and watched the game, so he knew exactly what I was going to do. So he just counterplayed it very, very well, played a very defensive game with his Blister. He didn't give me many targets for turn one. It was very difficult to get points off him. And he ended up losing that game as well. But we lost that round because I believe that Bryce played into Daniel Nauss. He annihilated him with Shark into Honor Masons, I believe. And then Jay lost his game on the other side of me. So ended up losing that one. Losing that 1-2-1. Perkins is off to a 0-2 start. So Perkins is feeling really good at this point.
Yeah. So wait. You've designed the guild. You've given him like a buff. And then you haven't won a game yet. No worries.
I mean, quite literally, game developers can't account for player skill, and I am obviously not as good as I used to be.
More games. No, all good.
You're a champ in our hearts, Jamie. You'll always be a champ in our hearts.
I appreciate that. As people were telling me over the weekend whilst I was there as well, did you hear anything about the dreaded Perkins watch?
Yes, that was fantastic. Yes. I had that as a stream. I was watching it.
My 12-year-old stepdaughter started looking that up, and I was like, "No, please don't, don't let." She discovered it, and just now she follows it on Twitter as well. Like, no, don't do that.
Is it still going? Like, there's still people like sledging you at the office and like bring it up occasionally. Like,
it,
you know.
It gets mentioned, but it's generally something that happens when we go on work trips. But I mean, yeah. So, but there was something that like hugely entertaining about it for me, which was I was walking down the corridor. I think it was on the Saturday evening or Friday evening, whatever it was. I was walking the corridor with Bryce. And Bryce is a fellow developer. He's not worked at Steamforge for quite as long as me, but he's a fellow developer that works on similar things. And Team Spain are coming down the other way, and they stopped us to talk to us, and they're just having a nice conversation. Like, hey, actually, we know who you are. You're that Jamie Perkins. And they looked at Bryce and went, and you're clicking the things out, and you're the other guy. And I just couldn't stop laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. Bryce had already had a really bad day, people telling him he looked really old and stuff, and he'd aged really badly, and just being sledged generally throughout the whole day. And I just couldn't stop laughing. So the rest of the week, obviously, I found the Spanish guys the next morning. I was like, whenever you speak to him, he is now, click your fingers at him and just say he's the other guy forever.
Brilliant.
Poor Bryce.
And that just caught on. The rest of the weekend, everyone else was like, hey, it's that other guy. It's the other guy.
You monster. You monster, Perkins. Still, I mean, if you're going to get sledged, you may as well share the love.
Exactly. Spread the wealth. Spread the wealth around.
Perkins watch. Never forget.
I love this. Now, as a question to that game, sorry, I thought of it then. Did you go into the matchup knowing that you were basically going to face the same lineup, or did you even contemplate taking Scarther, or did you literally take six models?
So I actually didn't take Scarther on my roster, which was a mistake in hindsight. And the reason I didn't do that is, as I was alluding to before, where I'm not a very good player anymore, I am really, really, I'm kind of okay with Theron. I can make Theron work. I'm not very good with Scarther. So I just decided I'm just not going to take her. Whereas what I should have done in hindsight was just practice with Scarther and then play her into some matchup. So I didn't take her at all. She wasn't on my roster. You're right. I should have realized that Werner had the same lineup or was going for the same lineup as Timmy, and that I should have remembered that he was sat watching the game. I didn't think about it at the time because there was quite a few people watching the game, and Werner was just one of those people, and obviously I was quite focused on, you know, Timmy and him not throwing up on my moles and stuff.
So maybe Timmy wasn't drunk. Maybe it was a whole, like...
No, Timmy was definitely drunk. He was like, Perkins, I know you said you don't mind rum, so I brought a bottle of Morgan's with me, but unfortunately the car drive was really long, so we drank it all. It's okay, Timmy. Don't worry about it.
Oh, my God. That is brilliant. Fantastic. No worries. So, yeah, I would suggest that maybe you can have a good chat to our mate. You're going over to the World Finals, I assume?
Yeah, I'm going to be at both SteamCons, yeah.
Our mate, Peter Pavlova, will be there, and he can teach you a little bit of Scarther tech because he manages to wreck face with both of them. So he's
I watched the finals of the Aussie Nationals, and he seems to be a really good player with Scarther. So yeah, I'll definitely take some pointers from him.
Absolutely. So round three, well, or any other round that you can remember in whatever order that you want.
Yeah.
Americans?
When we played the Americans in the last round, that was the game I told you before about Corsair. So we played the Americans in the last round, which was nice. We played Switzerland. Yeah, we played Switzerland. And who were the other people? Hungary. Yes, so we played Team Hungary round three. And they come with some sort of more casual players. There was a team captain who had studied quite a bit about Guild Ball and was quite excited to try and personally do very well. And his other two players, they seemed to mind a little bit less, and they were just sat kind of there for the bants and there for the fun. So I played into their captain, who was he really wanted to play into my hunters. He's like, I think I have a really good matchup into your hunters. I was like, okay, cool, let's play this game. And he played Veteran Rage into Theron. And then as soon as we're setting up, he says, I think I've got a good matchup, but I've only actually played this once. I went, you might be in for a spot of trouble then.
Great matchup.
No, neither do I. Particularly if he hasn't played it before, and with the utter aggression that I play. I think I played the most aggressive not the best game, but I played the most aggressive Theron game on the planet, which is certainly something that Timmy said, you know, after the game on Friday. Because I played all of my games in the other person's deployment zone.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I won that game 12-0. He was too aggressive with Veteran Rage on the first turn, which meant I was just able to just Rochambeau him with everything. He got all of the shots from Theron. He got Hearn thrown at him. He got Jakar thrown at him. And at that point, I just rolled the team up one at a time.
Yeah, at that time, he probably starts feeding you players trying to save, you know, Rage at that point, and it's just like pick one off at a time.
Well, he actually tried to save Rage, which meant I killed a couple of other players first. So it actually ended up working out really badly for him. It actually went worse for him because Rage died later in the game, but still having achieved nothing because he was trying to save him. So he actually didn't get to Legendary with Rage until turn four, I think it was, because Rage got taken out the first activation of turn three, along with Benediction. Like, both of them started the turn on about two boxes.
Yep.
So at that point, he just thought, I should probably concede here, but I'm really interested to learn more about this, so we're going to continue it onwards. I said, yep, fine, I did. It wasn't going to suggest for him to concede, and I was perfectly happy to play the game, but I could see that he quite clearly wasn't enjoying it because it was going so badly for him.
Yeah. No, look, you can always get two back-to-back goals, you know, engineered right if you can win a, you know, a turn and, you know, end of one turn, start of the next. So I don't think you should ever concede, and even, like you said, from a learning point of view, it's always good to just find out what other stuff does and just move models around alone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I expected him to score a goal because he had the ball sat on mist for most of the game, or for the most of the first half of the game, and he certainly had him in range to score a goal whenever he liked, and he kept allocating him three influence and then not going for it in the early turns. And then the turn he really should have gone for it, or the turn I was expecting him to go for it, he instead retreated to sort of help generate momentum for his team to just try and win an initiative role, because Rage was so, you know, for lack of a pun, pinned down all of the time. He couldn't get the initiative at all because he couldn't get his momentum generation going. So he brought Mist back to just try and generate some momentum off Jakar, who was stood near his goalpost. So he thought, he's in cover, so I can get more dice because of Skittled within Shadow, and try and generate some momentum. Didn't roll very well. It messed that up as well. And now the ball is down near his goal, near all my players. So everything he tried didn't go very well for him. He also got a bit unlucky at times. It was just a sort of a perfect storm of things that didn't go well for him. We ended up winning that round. So we finished day one on two team wins and one team loss.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, we were quite happy with that. We were just hoping to get either two or three team wins, and then we'd be happy for the weekend because we not going in expecting to win. We can play the game, but there are, you know, people out there that practice this to play competitively quite a lot. So we were just happy to go and get a couple of team wins. So we were really happy at this point.
I would argue there's quite a few people on the spectrum there that just can do this in their sleep. Like, there's some guys that are savants at the way that it rolls out. So,
yeah, absolutely. And while the staff members sort of play quite a lot because we playtesting the game is a very different skill to playing competitively, because you're doing things like takebacks, playtest rolls where you sort of fudge the dice, or going, that probably shouldn't have happened, so let's rewind that to see how it would have happened. So you're never improvising with situations that have gone wrong, because you're always trying to see what should have happened. So improvisation isn't a skill that we practice. And, pardon me, playing on the clock is also another skill we don't practice. So it's, yeah.
It's almost like competitive Guild Ball is Guild Ball on the darkest timeline, right?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
To use that community analogy, they've got a bunch. There's an episode where they have a bunch of timelines, and they roll the dice, and eventually they land on the darkest timeline where shit goes wrong. That is basically tournament Guild Ball. You know, you're on.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. I know what you're saying.
Shit goes wrong all the time.
No, it does. I mean, I really enjoyed that improvisation, but it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge.
Yeah, I just want to live in a world where perfectly average dice exist. Jamie, is that too much to ask? Should we start a fundraiser?
good luck.
3.5 written on each side is that, or you know, two six-sided dice? How do you want to do it? I just
have a lot of feelings.
I mean, at the same time, the game would be a bit less exciting, wouldn't it, if those things didn't happen? Because that's probably the parts about my games that I enjoyed the most over the weekend, apart from the playing really nice opponents every round. It was that improvisation of when things did go wrong, that frustration of going, oh, that should have worked. But then the next turn going, actually, it's okay, I've got a plan to deal with that. And when that plan to deal with it works, you're like, oh, that felt really good because you've achieved something.
It's a puzzle-like solving process, and if you have to come up with a really janky puzzle, you know, you get that reward at the end of it, you know, that endorphin rush. I remember one where I had to, I needed to basically get a kill straight up in one activation, managed to, the other player had already gone first, and I went second in the turn, and Pinvice does the heroic to make Ratchet Mechanica, then gives him deletion, then Ratchet, and then, gets him to go next. Ratchet goes straight away, tools himself up, and I shoot someone down from range, you know, needing like a five, I think it was greed or something like that, shoot him down from rage, but he only had four from range and only had four left on him and dead. And it's when you solve one of those problems, it's like, that's fantastic. You get that reward in the game.
Yeah.
I love it. So that was the Hungary?
Yes, that was, round three into Hungary, and then we played. So that was, then we had the Saturday evening where we did a bit of a Q&A, and I got to tell the story about the other guy for Bryce. The whole room laughed, which was good. And some of the stuff got asked, but you don't need to know about that. So Sunday morning we got matched. So we got against Switzerland. That was it. And I believe Switzerland had they had a big round one scalp, and I can't remember if it was a USA team or a Germany team, but they beat a big team in round one. So we were like, oh, this is probably going to be a bit of a tough round. And the first thing they did as they got to the table was, we've brought a load of chocolate for everyone from Switzerland. So here's a chocolate bar for each person. I'm like, oh, this is great. I don't even care about the game anymore. Like, I'm happy. I just, because it's really nice bar of chocolate. Anyway, so I got matched up against Philip Butchers on the middle table. Jay got matched up against Obulus Morticians. And what did Bryce get? Bryce got, I think it was Pin Vice Engineers. That was it. And Jay was the first game to finish, and he got absolutely trounced 12-0 by this exceptionally good female Obulus player. And he's just like, she's better than you, Jamie. I said, like, that's not hard to do, to be fair, is it, Jay? But she's just like, I've never felt so powerless in a game against Morticians. I didn't get to make any choices there at all. She's just an excellent player, and I'm going to go to the bar now. So, all right, bye. So he was done. So we're down a game already. I thought, that's not good. And I'm playing against someone that knows also how to play Philip. He's playing very aggressively. This is the only game that we played in my deployment zone, because even though I kicked off, he just managed to push the game back and back and back towards me. But I had the one thing up my sleeve, which is, there's a really weird sort of almost like nuclear weapon race between Philip and Theron, which is, both of those models are actually quite good at taking each other out. It just depends on who gets into the other person first and in what situation. So if Theron actually manages to walk into Philip on a full stack and Theron isn't bleeding, if he gets to base-to-base contact, Philip isn't actually going to be able to escape, because she only has one-inch dodges on her playbook and her knockdown is very high and stuff. She's not going to be able to escape very easily. So Theron can kind of do what he likes to her. And then, as soon as Theron starts doing any damage at all, obviously he inflicts that snare condition, which is just super deadly on a defense 5 model that will drop to defense 4 and armor 0. And then if you start bonus timing attacks and stuff, then you're very likely to start hitting your momentous 2 damage a lot of the time. You've only actually also really got to do 12 damage to fill it, because you've always got your heroic play to finish her off, where you can just use your heroic play, Blessing of the Sunfather, to use one of your range character players like Snipe or Pin to do that last 2 damage. You've only really got to do 12 damage to fill it and then finish her off with the last shot. And I actually managed to do that twice during the game, where I took out fill it twice. He was taking out lots of my players as well, and it was a question of, like, neither of us could really defend ourselves very well, because both of us were just going for all the takeouts and stuff. And I think he had the ball sat on Shank for a very long time, up near my goal, but he didn't want to score until he'd got to 8 points on takeouts, because he was very worried about me getting the goal in return with Jakar or my equally fast players. So he had the ball sat on Shank for a while, and I couldn't really get it off Shank, because Shank has such an effective counterattack against Hunters that he can escape very easily, so it's very difficult to go and tackle the ball without him tackling it back and leaving or whatever. So I couldn't get the ball. So it was literally, we were both racing to get all the takeouts as fast as possible. And it was just a question of, I just managed to get mine a little bit quicker than he did. He made a big mistake, I think, when Philip came back on the table after being taken out, which is, he brought her back on my left hand side. He brought her back on the left hand side, and she was only in charge range of Theron. Theron couldn't get to her, because obviously Shuma is faster. But Theron was the only model that she could get to. And he then didn't activate Philip first. He had the first activation, but didn't go with Philip first, went with somebody else. So I had a very straightforward choice, which is, you've got 6 influence here sat on Philip, and I can just make you completely lose that by just moving Theron away from her, which is exactly what I did. I went and activated Theron, brought him into the fight, killed Boar, I think it was. And then, so he loses a player, and he loses all of the influence on Philip, because she's going to not take part in the turn. So he then panicked a little bit, because we're both running low on clock, and I think we're both on to like 6 or 8 points at this point. So he's like, I need to get her into the game quickly. So he just kind of sprints her up to get her as close to the action as possible. But because I've then just had a really good turn, because he's lost 6 influence and he's lost an activation, and I kind of annihilated him over that turn, I win the initiative. And Philip is just sat on 7 boxes right next to Theron. So she just gets taken out straight away again. So at that point, the game was kind of over. I didn't manage to get any goals in that game, but that's because he didn't let me have the ball. So I just kind of went with what was in front of me. I managed to get the 6 takeouts. And Bryce ended up playing a really really good game against Pin Vice Engineers. And Bryce is just a very efficient player. He actually won all 5 of his games over the weekend. He was just carrying me and Jay the whole time. I mean, we'd say that he got the easier matchups, but that's what we're saying. But
Bryce ranked 3rd, I believe. So yep, that's so pretty handy.
He won two games with Shark, I think it is, and three games with Corsair. So he was an absolute monster for the weekend for us. So he wins his game against Pinvice Engineers, and we actually won the round. So we got three. We're up 3-1 at this point. And we're just like, cool, we're really happy. We've got our three wins. We don't mind if we win or lose the last round. It'd be nice if we do. But at this point, we know we're in a bit of a shark tank because we're playing other teams that are on 3-1. We're probably playing, I know the USA one, strictly the worst team, had just lost at this point. So we're like, it's possible for us to play them. It's possible for us to play some of the England teams or the other Germany teams. Like, we're not expecting to do well in this last round, but we're already happy. We've got our three wins, so we're good. And then we played this really, really nice, relaxed last round against Team USA too, because I said I played this really nice game with Jacob where we got to have a really good chat the night before, got to know each other, and then we got to play a game, which was just a really nice experience overall, particularly because he's a very polite opponent. And the same thing happened for Bryce. He played against Jared, can't remember his second name, Jared something. And,
Jared McGraw.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Jared McGraw.
Jared McGraw. Shout out to that bloke.
So they played Obulus into Corsair, and they had a really nice chat before the game as well. Me and Bryce were saying to each other, it'd be really nice if we just got a quite relaxed game. I don't mind if we win or lose the last round, but it'd be nice if we got sort of a nice relaxed game to finish the weekend off. Or, you know, we don't want a really, really tough, like, deep divey grindy game so against like people that like try harding and want to win really, really hard. So
yeah,
Jared's team walked up to us and he's like, he goes straight up to Bryce. He says, like, it's a real pleasure that we get to play your team, because Jared actually got into Guild Ball at Gen Con the year before, and he said, I got into the game through speaking to you guys, and it went up to Bryce. And he's just like, I remember having a very long conversation with you about how tournaments run and stuff. And you guys, you know, talking to you guys got me into the game. So it's really nice that we get to play you. It's like, oh, that's really cool. And it was just exactly the match that we wanted. We wanted to play, you know, a good competitive game of Guild Ball, but it was going to be nice against a group of opponents that were just going to be well-mannered all around. Yeah. And that's exactly how it was. It was just a really nice, chilled out last round. Bryce ended up winning his game against Jared, Corsair into Obulus. Jay ended up losing his game into, I think it was Mason's. And I played my game. My game was the last one to finish against Jacob. So we had that coin flip at the end where I went for the two-dice shot. And if I win it, then I win the game and we win the round. And if I miss it, then I time out and we lose the round. I missed the shot. I timed out. We lost. Big hugs, big sweaty, stupid, geeky hugs at the end, because it was just great. It was all nice to finish. And it was just, yeah, so we finished on three wins and two losses for the team. Thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. And just in terms of the story of our weekend, we got to play thoroughly nice opponents. And we just finished off with the perfect last round, which was that, you know, as I said before, sort of a competitive but quite relaxed final game, which is a great way to finish the weekend. It was just really nice all around.
That's nice, Jamie. That's nice. Fun fact about Jared McGraw, he doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the world down.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
He's actually a lot taller than I was expecting him to be. Like, I do remember. Yeah. He's a bit of an imposing man. So I was like, hey, you look a bit scary. I know you're a nice guy, but you look very scary, so I'm going to stand over here.
Yeah,
that's a good dude. Shout out to that dude. I mean, it sounds basically, by the recap of how awesome it was, I'm crying on the inside because I've been watching a lot of the Warmer Horde WTCs over the years and not being able to go, that kind of thing. And when the Guild Ball one came up, I was just so filthy because I knew I didn't have enough time to kind of, you know, manufacture being able to go, even if, you know, we got an Australian team together. So I was super filthy at seeing you guys have an awesome time, but we're definitely trying to get to the next one.
Yeah, I was about to ask if you think you'll be able to get an Aussie team over to next year, because I think even with the other game systems in the WTC, it did take Australia a couple of years to get over, because obviously it takes you guys a long time to gather the funds together and stuff. I think it's probably more expensive for you guys than anybody else. I don't know if about America or Canada, but certainly up there. So I know it's really difficult for you guys to get over there.
We're very
unless strong, they but, hold it in Australia. Yeah,
but then it'll be the other way around.
Exactly. I mean, then you just charter one big jumbo.
You'll probably win at that point. That's because you'll be the only guys playing in it.
No one else is there. Now, we are genuinely starting to work on a few things to raise some funds. So Double Dodge and Dave and I are trying to work some stuff out. So in the pipelines, because, it just looks like, gaming aside, gaming as the fun component, a great catch-up and just a great weekend, you know. Good blokes, lots of beer and lots of games.
Yes, I mean... Because it's got the name sort of this, the World Team Championship, and people can be sort of put off a little bit by the serious nature of the name and that it's, you know, national teams and stuff. But when you actually and getting onto a team can be quite competitive in sometimes, depending on what country you come from and how much challenge and space there is for the spots to go. But once you actually get there, it's one of the greatest social atmospheres. I mean, people used to refer to it as War Machine Summer Camp, or Guild Ball Summer Camp in our case. It's just getting to go, just play some games and learn some stuff. You always come away from the event having learned more and playing better than when you started. You've met about 5 or 6 new people that are now some of your closest friends, and you've made some really good memories. And you'll want to talk to those people again when you go in future years. And it's when you're actually there, it's nowhere near as serious as people would probably have it believe. And it's just a fantastic atmosphere to be a part of. And I would, it's anybody that can go, I would highly recommend going to experience it, even if you just go for. I mean, they run solo events now as well. So if it's possible that I don't know if they're planning to or not, but it's possible the Guild Ball solo event could start up in future years. And if anybody
else, I was going to ask whether they did that, because I know they do that for the Warmer Hordes.
There wasn't one this year for Guild Ball. They might do it in future years. I think it very much depends on space, because it's a 500 person event now. It really much depends on where they can fit it and where they can fit everyone and getting the max and terrain, etc. But if it's possible to go, just absolutely go. It's worth going even once. It's such an amazing sort of once in a lifetime experience for anybody that plays any war game as well as just Guild Ball.
I definitely want to go. I think I now understand why it was where it was, given the amount of beer that was consumed. It all kind of makes sense to me with 500 people. So yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah,
the sense of community is pretty awesome.
Sorry, Cam, to cut in. Yeah, no, we've got some plans afoot, Perkins, and stay tuned. We may have to bring you in on these plans at some point.
I mean, I'm not Australian.
No, but that doesn't matter. We'll forgive you.
Okay.
The fundraising component, Jamie. You, your robe, bikini. I'm not sure I need to say much more.
No, you're. I'm excited.
We're basically making a calendar. That's what we're doing.
All right.
You're going to be December, Jamie, because Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Brilliant. So I was, I did have another question or another kind of tangent to go on. We're obviously talking about community. You guys are kicking off or have kicked off the community event. So, stage 2 or the next level of after the Butcher Civil War is, was it the Union Unchained? Is that right?
Union in Chains.
Chains. Do you want to give us a little bit of a brief on that? And I mean, it looks pretty awesome in terms of community involvement and engagement.
So let's just pause for a sec, because my random dancing clock has decided to go off.
All right. This happened last time.
I thought about that.
Yeah, it did. This is media trading.
This got so annoying that I just switched off the music, because it bugs me that much. But
I believe we talked about when you had this clock on, that there's a certain period of time that you can keep it before throwing it out. Now might be that time.
I mean, it's a massive clock as well. It's more than a foot tall, and it's a good couple of inches deep, and it's made of metal, so it's not exactly light to pick up. So I'm sure I could do some damage with that. Like, I can, put some windows through or whatever. But don't tell anybody I said that.
Rewind, mate. Just between you and us.
Yeah. Oh, please, just shut up and die.
This is brilliant. We need to take this music and put it as, like, an intermission music, though.
I'm going to have Perkins saying, just shut up and die on loop to a backbeat.
Yeah. I love it. And maybe if you can cut out the audio when he says clock, just take the L out of it and leave all the bit where he talks about the massive metal chunk.
I'm all about making solutions, finding solutions to problems. Union in Chains, yeah. Perkins, tell us about that.
So this is our community event for this year, and it's based off the success of the Butcher Civil War last year. I think it was we had 5,000 recorded games involved in the Butcher Civil War last year, which is just amazing. And we expected it to for people to like it, but we didn't even expect it ourselves to go that well. So it was great that we had so much engagement with it last year. So that's inspired us to go even bigger and better this year. Last year, that it had a bit of an effect on the storyline, and it affected the role of obviously what happened to Brisket, and she ended up going into the Union. This year, we've scaled it up so that it affects way more models. I think it affects 4, I believe, where we've picked out basically 4 of the Union models who for whatever reason, as I'm sure you'll find out in the storyline, are considering leaving or exiting otherwise the Union. So what's happening is all of the other guilds are basically competing for their not for hiring them as a union player that they used to be, but actually competing for their permanent services. So what's happening here is we've faced off a number of guilds against each other. So, for example, I believe that the Butchers and Fishermen are playing over Gutter, I want to say.
Yes.
And there's, like, I think it's the Morticians and the Hunters playing over Hemlock and stuff like that. Like Decimate between the Brewers and the Masons and Harry for the Alchemists and Engineers, I think. And what's going to happen is that anyone playing in this event can submit results online, as they did last year as well. And it's not just going to be about two different sides. It's not just the Butchers against the other Butchers. This is these guilds facing off against each other. And you can submit results. Like, I think you can even play for different guilds. Like, say, for example, if you happen to be playing your Brewers at the moment, but you actually want to submit results for the Morticians because you want to play them and you want to see their storyline advance, you can do that. You can submit a result for the Morticians playing as the Brewers, for instance. And it's whoever racks up the most amount of victories, I believe, at the end of the campaign is going to win the permanent services of that player. Now, that doesn't mean that that guild is going to win that player in its current form, because that would obviously take a huge amount of players away from the Union. The Union are going to get to keep those models as they are, so they're going to get to keep Decimate as they are. But the advanced storyline version of that model, aka the veteran versions of those models, we will create a veteran version in the future, and that version of that model will play for that guild. So, for example, if the Butchers win, get more results than the Fishermen, then they, in the future, will get a veteran version of Gutter that will play exclusively for them and nobody else.
I want.
Yeah, I like this. So, veteran Harry, he's got crazy and he's like tech 11, something like that, right?
Possible. I mean, the rules for these veterans have yet to be finalized, but there are a number of renders that we've finished already. So over the next couple of weeks, you're going to get to see renders for these different versions of the models that we've made. So, like, there is a render that I think you've already seen, the render for the Mason Decimate, and there is also a render for, there will be a render that you'll see eventually for the Brewers version of Decimate. And literally what's going to happen is the one that wins, you'll get to keep, and we'll make it. And the one that loses is going to get scrapped, and it will never be made. So the stakes couldn't be higher.
Do you have a favourite render, Jamie?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I do. I mean, obviously, because I love the Hunters, I do quite like the Hunter Hemlock. She looked pretty. But that hammer on the Mason Decimate looks... she could do some serious damage with that. So, I don't know. They're all really good. I mean, there's... It's difficult because I'm trying to remember at what point what things you've seen and what things you haven't seen.
That's right. Just tell us everything.
That's cool. There are some other renders that you're going to see in the near future that I think are very, very pretty. And that's all I'm going to say for now.
Right. And have you written rules for each of these new models?
As I mentioned before, they're not finalized, so they're in development. But yes, there are rules. They're not going to come out in the veteran form sort of literally as soon as the campaign finishes, unfortunately. The timelines just don't allow for that. But it will be as soon as we can get them out, and the development of those sort of the veteran models are started already. So,
right. Excellent. Very exciting. I listened to Singled Out, and they had Sherwin on there talking about Union in Chains. And, I really like that you guys have gone fully transparent with this. Because he referenced a bunch of, I guess, conspiracy theorists who thought that maybe Steamforged had fudged the outcome of the last one. Now, I know you guys are, you know, upstanding people and you wouldn't do that, but having it all out there in the open is fantastic. You know, it's really good to see it as a tally kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just nice to be, you know, it's nice to... I was going to say something nasty then. Like, it's nice to silence the naysayers. That's not true. It's nice to have everyone on board and believing in what's going on. So it just makes it that much more real for people, right?
I agree, man. Jet fuel can't melt steel beams.
No comment on that.
Brilliant.
Excellent. So any closing thoughts on the WTC, Jamie? Like, would you like to leave us with, you know, something that we can take into the next year and motivate us to get there?
I mean, just literally, if you can do it, it is worth it. Even if it's a once in a lifetime thing, you know, you're never going to get to go again and it's going to cost you a lot of money, it is worth going to once just to experience it. And so you can go home and tell your friends about it, get them to go as well, because it's something it needs to grow further, and it's only a thing that's good for the game, you know. So it's if you can get there, go to it, because it's fantastic. And then you get to experience the silly things like Perkins Watch, which I really hope will die.
Nothing silly about it. I'm pretty sure it's a thing of beauty. I think the internet has already spoken, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly the response we wanted. Well, thank you very much for your time, Jamie. You always humour us, and well, I was going to say you get up at an odd time, but you're just like slacking off and not going to work at the moment, aren't you? Going in late today?
I'm going a bit late today. We've got a staff play test that I run, so I get to go in a bit later.
Nice.
We'll send you a note. Like we'll write you an email with a note. That should give you the necessary excuse. Jamie needed some personal time in his dressing gown. Please excuse his tardiness.
He was busy doing a photo shoot in a bikini. It's fine.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you to Mr. December, Jamie Perkins. Your time is greatly appreciated. We love having you on.
We will make that happen.
Bye.
Welcome back. I love chatting with all those guys.
I concur.
I find that deeply reassuring, Campbell, given that, you know, if you didn't concur, we'd probably start some kind of international incident.
Absolutely. One of us would possibly start a podcast called Single Dodge. I don't know.
Wow.
Maybe.
The 15th?
Push Dodge? Best. Push Dodge, maybe? 15th best.
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure we're in single digits. Like, I don't think there are actually that many Guild Ball podcasts. So,
yeah.
But that was a fantastic chat. I really enjoy the Germans. They were like quality. It was interesting to actually, when we chatted to Perkins, he pointed out how difficult it is for everyone else to understand the German meta, given that they don't always use tiebreak. And then obviously the forums, surprisingly, are in German. To really understand where they are as a meta. So, you know, their ability to kind of jump other people or at least, you know, have something that's a little bit of a surprise, I found that quite fascinating.
They're all playing chess while we're playing checkers.
Yeah, straight up.
Crazy Germans.
I mean, the fact that, like, you know, the winning team didn't work out the draw, although it sounds like no one did, in the matchup pairing process until, like, round four. I find that, like, quite amusing as well. Like, it's straight-up player skill at that point, right?
I just figure no battle plan survives contact with the enemy, right?
Fact.
I read that on a calendar somewhere. Whatever, man. I'm 14 and this is deep. So do we have anybody we need to say thank you to?
We do. So we have a little Patreon page. It's for us to basically fund, you know, the website, Dave having to support Orphans, basically doing the editing for him, pretending he's doing the editing. Mm-hmm. But basically, there's a lot of money and time that goes into doing this. We do it because we love it. And the people that jump on and support us on a monthly basis is fantastic. We have a new supporter. His name is Will. Will Tybalt. Mate, you're wasting your fucking money. I don't know what you're doing. Like, you're supporting something that's probably trash. Our intros and outros just get worse and worse, but we really appreciate what you've done. So your stuff's in the mail. You'll be getting your stubby holder and your widget. And also, as a shout-out to anyone else, I'm messaging everyone on the Patreon page. If you haven't got it yet, let me know. Apparently, US Mail like to steal our widgets. Good mate Jared pointed that out to me. So, yeah.
Thanks, Trump.
Nice. Oh, sorry. And our very close mate, Hayden Sheeny, even though you're only supporting us for a dollar, I did say that I was going to shout you out. Mate, be less shit. Next year, I want to see at least another dollar in that account, okay?
Poor bastard, dude. He's saving for a wedding. And you gave him so much grief that he's like, fine, shut the fuck up. Here's a dollar a month.
Yeah, it did. It was a straight shut up, Campbell. You're a dickhead.
Like, basically. I am putting Orphans to work, but what are you doing?
I'm breaking up marriages apparently before they've even started. Mm. I don't know. Sorry, Ella. Sorry.
Yeah. So I wanted to throw a big shout out to Beard Minis. This guy is such a lovely guy. I put a thing out on Twitter saying, oh my god, I really love the Theron and Fahad Chibi cards. How do I get my hands on them? And out of nowhere, he, with no prompting, said, yeah, I've got some. I'll send them to you. And they arrived the other day, and it's just a lovely, like, you know, one of those little surprises you get in the mail. They're great. They're fantastic. So thank you. You're a lovely bloke. You're making some great content. You're fucking hilarious. So anybody who hasn't seen his stuff yet, go check it out. He's on YouTube. You can hit him up on Twitter. He's a very chatty fellow. Top dude. Thank you. Yeah.
Quality beard. I love it. Mm. Love it. I think we should actually shout out our good friend, Big Daz, NerdvanaGamesSA.com. He's our dealer. He actually does a lot for the Australian Guild Ball community. So we like to support him, and he supports us. He looks after us. So, Big Daz, you're a legend. Fucking turn up to the club this week, okay? Be less shit, because I think you owe me a game.
I think the greatest thing he did for the Guild Ball community was at Nats when he... when we'd all had a few, and he showed us how to make the batwing out of our scrotums. That's fucking amazing. Like, he's a gift that keeps on giving. I'm flying around the house like a squirrel glider now. It's great. I also wanted to just double back to the calendar, the Guild Ball calendar.
Yep.
This is something that we're going to do as a fundraiser. So if there are any people, you know, Guild Ball personalities or whatever, if you want to get involved, we're planning on making something ridiculous to try and raise funds for the Australian WTC team.
Yeah.
You know, Perkins is obviously Mr. December, and nobody can ever take his place. But maybe you see yourself as a, you know, a Mr. or a Ms. or a Mrs. October, maybe March. Find a month you like. You know, we'll arrange a photo shoot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think without Jamie Giblin's knowledge, we're going to lock him into Mr. January. I think those eyes alone can sell him that role. Yeah.
That's how I want to ring in the new year, I tell you.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are genuinely trying to basically fundraise for the WTC next year. I think we found out about it, well, everyone did, within a year, well, it was about 6 or 7 months, so... It wasn't enough notice for Aussies to kind of get the purse together. It's a fair old cost to get over to Europe. There are a shit ton of guys here that would actually love to go over, but obviously funds permitting. So we're in the process of doing a few things like that. We've got a few other, you know, irons in the fire, but the calendar will definitely be one of the fundraising projects that we're going to launch. So
yeah, and if you're an Australian player and you have an interest in going to the WTC, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, or like over private message. We're really keen to start that process. Don't know if we get a committee together, but we certainly want to get at least a pool of players who have an interest in going over there to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even hit up your local pundit. We know all the pundits in Australia, so... we can at least get some kind of system going. Obviously, it's time permitting and funds permitting, but I do know our good mate, Hayden Sheehan, has already booked holidays for that time of year next year. So I don't know if he's just, you know, trying to put his, you know, his stuff out there, trying to sell himself, but I like that. I like that commitment.
Yeah, he's like Mel Gibson in Braveheart, really.
Oh, isn't he? Isn't he?
He does remind me of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think that's everything that we've covered. That's all the administration. Maybe it's time to make a batwing and flap on out of here.
You could do that. I've still got my pants on, so...
Yep.